This is Brock and Saul.
Brock Heward and Marcus. Sorry about just
Mike.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
You were not exactly Joe Cap there in the pocket.
Presented by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Saul.
All right, moving along here, Brock and Saul, Seattle Sports on 710. Scott Service is going to join us in 30 minutes at 7:30 from Toronto. And then Jeff Passan at 8:30 this morning. In between, some baseball talk, some football talk. We had some Raise the Rim talk earlier.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Raise the Rim.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's like Raise the Roof, but it'll fix basketball. Really, even more than that, widen the court. I mean, just give these guys.
You had some Raise the Rim
talk. Yeah. Well, I mean, you were here, so we had that talk. It was it was part of the show that we're all doing. Good morning, Brock.
Good morning, Michael. I appreciate you putting my thank you, by the way, for putting my NFL draft profile on the show rundown.
Well, you know, if you were here 5 days a week, you would be there all the time. But you come out on Friday, I take it off, and then I forget it. Put it back in.
In one of the breaks yesterday, he was kind of like, if he doesn't put that draft profile on.
Jeez.
Yeah. I'm just kind of curious if he knows like what we do every day at 9.
Forget about it.
Well, I mean, schedule guests.
If it was every day, then I would know that that's what we do. But when
it's pretty much every day.
When it's 4 days, then it's, you know, the world continues to turn even when you're not here.
Pretty much every day.
Can I ask you a question to start today? Because this has been asked of me a lot, and I'd like to turn it back around on the people who are asking.
Okay.
It says, the question here is that a lot of people will hit me up and say, hey, when are we going to talk about how Kelnick and Gino Suarez and Teo Hernandez are doing? How come you're not talking more about that? Mm-hmm. To which I say, well, we talked about it last week. What do you want, every show to be about that? I don't know what you want me to say. We have talked about it. But more importantly, why do you want to know? What's the reason behind it? Mm. I think that's what's the more important question. How are they doing? They're doing great. All three of those guys have an OPS way over 1,000. They're crushing it. Mm-hmm. They're doing awesome. Kelnick is locked in. He's got a batting average over 500. Do I expect that to last? No. But obviously, he's had a really good start to the season. Teo has like 4 or 5 home runs and leading the team in RBI. He's been phenomenal in LA. Suarez is killing the ball. He's not striking out. I mean, like, they look awesome, all three of them. Mm-hmm. True. Mm-hmm. The Mariners do not look very good. Their offense looks very predictable, very much like what we've seen. And so the comp is obvious. But why do you want to know? Do you want to know because you want to twist the knife? If so, I get it. That's fine. If it's just about causing yourself pain, I totally understand that. Seriously, I really do. Totally get it. If it's just about, oh, see, look what they're doing. I grew up there was a guy in Boston named Bob Lobel who did the sports on Channel 4 for about 1,000 years.
Bob Lobel.
You've probably seen him. He used to do some national stuff. But Bob's bit was anytime a player would do well against one of his teams, against one of the Boston teams, he would say, why can't we get guys like that?
Mm.
He'd say it all the time. It was just like, it was a, you know, one of those phrases that everybody in town knew.
It was his shtick.
It was his shtick. Yes. Why can't we get guys like that?
Yeah.
And if that's all it is, believe me, I'm very familiar with it. Mm-hmm. I totally get it.
Mm-hmm.
Is it because you're trying to prove that, you know, the Mariners can't have good things and can't have success and anybody who comes here is bad and when they leave, they're good? Okay. If that's it, I guess I understand it.
Mm-hmm.
Or is it because you actually wanted them to run it back?
Right.
Did you want them to keep Kelnick and Teo and Suarez? Because if you actually want to have the conversation in a way that is more than just, you know, hey, let's lament the pain, I'm interested in that conversation. What is it Wyman and Bob do, the What If Wednesday?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a really good idea, by the way. I don't know whose idea that was, but I think it's a spectacular idea, and I'm jealous that we didn't think of it. I think it's awesome. What If Wednesday? What if the Mariners had run it back?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think Teo would be struggling and Kelnick would be struggling and Gino would be struggling? Or do you think that they'd be having some level of success? How different would this team look if they hadn't decided to move in the direction they did to take the same budget? Mm-hmm. So if you're this is a Jerry DePoto question, right? This isn't a John Stanton question or an ownership question. If you were to accept that the budget was not going to change, should they have done this differently? Should they have tried to run it back with something more akin to what they did last year?
Don't you think it is just what's natural as a sports fan? Don't you think it is very similar to what we do with the Seahawks, what we do in the NFL draft? Well, if we would have taken this guy,
of course.
Well, if we wouldn't have traded down, well, we could have had this guy. We could have had, you know, that offensive tackle that I loved out of Wisconsin that went to New Orleans for 10 years. Or we could have had Kevin King, or we could have had that
That's
tackle.
That's second-guessing, right? That's just second-guessing.
Yeah.
And following the path not taken. For me, it's very similar to in blackjack. If you hit versus stand, and then you want to see what the next card out of the chute is because you want to find out whether or not it would have worked out differently for you. Yeah, some of it is morbid curiosity.
Right,
morbid curiosity. Absolutely.
I think that's the majority. I think that's a majority of Mariner fans. I think that's a majority. I'd certainly probably fit into some of that silo. Like, geez, you know, let's compare and contrast. This is what we could have had. We could have had this asset. We had Jared Kelnick under contract. You had, you know, you didn't have necessarily Tao, but you could have posed the qualifying offer. You had Geno under contract. You had Marco under contract. So you had these pieces, but you, as the organization, made a decision to move on from them to go in a different direction.
How would you have felt if they'd run it back with those three?
Well, I think you know my feeling upon the watching many, many, many of those at-bats last year. It was difficult for me. Difficult for me to watch the lack of contact, you know, and obviously the very, very, very high strikeout rate where those guys, had Jared been healthy, you know, you're talking about three of the top 10 strikeout percentage guys in all of baseball, all on your team, in Tao and Suarez and Jared. So that would have been challenging for me. Which is why I didn't kill those moves when they made them or had a hard time with them. But now you're kind of in the evaluative, okay? You move on from them. You can see what they're doing elsewhere. Mm-hmm. What are you doing with your return?
This one's hard for me a little bit because
you really liked this team last year.
I really did. And when I see and the argument I made over and over again last year was, hey, sometimes you get a bad year from a good player.
Yep.
Sometimes you get good Tao. Sometimes you get bad Tao. And unfortunately for the Mariners, they kind of got down years from a bunch of guys that I think are pretty good. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether Kelnick is one of them. I mean, and we'll wait and see. I mean, he started off like a house of fire last year also and crumbled more like a house of cards. So we'll see which type of house Jared Kelnick turns out to be this year. In Tao's case, would it have worked out if he'd stayed here? I don't know. Brock, you can ask your guy, Joe Davis, because I think it was Joe who was talking about this the other day, that one of the reasons Tao chose L.A. is because he loved the batter's eye there and didn't like the batter's eye here in Seattle. He's like, do I think it was actually bad? No, but it got in my head that it was, and I struggled. Right. Yep. And I always loved hitting in L.A., so that's where I went. And right now he feels comfortable, confident, and he's hitting. There is a mental element to this.
No question.
You know, Geno... I like Geno. It's not a surprise to me that Geno Suarez is able to hit better than he did last year. Mm-hmm. So to me, it kind of backs up the luck argument or the bad luck argument from last season. But what would have happened if after the way the season ended, after the calls and cries from the players themselves in the clubhouse, what if they had done not nothing, but essentially run it back with the same group? I don't know that they could have done that. Correct. And maybe that's a little unfortunate because I think some of what we saw last year was overreaction to what was a little bit, not entirely, but a little bit of bad luck and not just bad construction.
Yeah, because you looked at the totality of it, right? And we talked about this a little bit with Julio yesterday. In totality of that marathon, that was an incredible time that he posted. In totality, you scored the 12th most runs in baseball. I mean, those were the raw numbers. I mean, that was the level of that production that, you know, you can nitpick and say, well, look at how many zero-run games they had, one-run games, less than three-run games. They, you know, but the numbers are the numbers. I mean, they scored the 12th most runs in baseball. And how they ended up getting there and some of the struggles and ultimately, you know, a pretty cold September that unfortunately knocked them out of it. Yeah, I mean, there's lots of ways, man. It's the beauty and the curse of baseball. You can, you know, just like that baseball that you can spin and make it do different things and go in different directions. You know, you can spin a lot of the conversation, too, that you really weren't that far off. You really weren't that far off. And the minute these boys start playing a little bit better and these bats start to come alive and start to pressurize your opponents because, you know, JP's not going to hit like this and Julio's not going to hit like this and Polanco's not going to hit like this.
Carver's not going to hit like this.
Carver's not going to hit like this.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, this is a conversation you have 11 games into the season, and it's kind of easy to look, as you said, the morbid curiosity. We check this again in 11 more games, and we may say, God, that was a silly conversation we ever had. Looks, Suarez is back down and Teo's back down, and all of a sudden Julio's hitting 400 over the last week, and you know, everything changes entirely. But it just kind of, to me, that's an interesting conversation of what would have happened if, as opposed to just morbid curiosity, which I understand fully. Do it myself. But I don't know how productive it is to just continue to stab yourself in the stomach and think about what could have been. Scott Service is going to join us in 20 minutes from Toronto. We'll give you guys everything you need to know, including one gigantic number. It's next on Brock and Salk.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, it is starting to feel very familiar, unfortunately, Brock. It looks familiar, it sounds familiar, it feels familiar. Another game, another night of anemic offense and some pitching that unfortunately didn't get it done. This time, Luis Castillo, who only went five, he allowed four more runs. He wasn't awful, but he wasn't sharp, and certainly not as sharp as he needs to be or sharp as you would expect an ace to be. Scott Service knows you got to have more from him.
They're just not consistent. We're not putting a
Hold on, that's the wrong one. This was the one I wanted.
I think anybody that's got their top of the rotation guy that is struggling like that, you need him back. You know, there's no question about it. He's certainly capable of doing that. You know, it's just got to be a little bit more fine when you are ahead like that. You can't miss in the middle of the plate against, you know, premier hitters.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I mean, 185 whip and three starts, Salky. That's just not, that's not Luis. That's not the Luis we've come to know and love over the last year and a half, certainly. And you know, give some credit. Rojas made a couple of really good plays there defensively. He made a great play at third base in that inning that could have been an even bigger crooked number for Toronto. But, yeah, just too many balls. Like, when you watched, and they have faced some great pitching, too. I mean, the dude last night, Rios was just all over the edges of it. CB Buckner is a total mess, but at least he's a mess both ways with a bunch of that. But you're just leaving too much fat out there. And these opponents are making him pay over the course of three starts that have just been, as the skip said right there, not what you need.
Yeah, they're not quality starts. He's yet to have a quality start this year. In fact, the team rotation as a whole only has three in 11 games. That's not going to work, right? I mean, the offense has been problematic in its own right, as has the defense. But this team is built on its starting pitching. And if your rotation is only going to give you three quality starts and 11 tries, that's probably not going to be enough. Of course, what's maybe the most frustrating to watch, though, is the offense and the continued struggles there.
They're just not consistent. We're not putting a full game together, either on the mound or at the plate right now. And, you know, that's what happens. You're not gonna win many games unless you start doing that.
We're going to talk to Scott a little bit more about this. He'll join us here in about 15 minutes. And, yeah, I think he's stated it very simply. They just need more. Now, that being said, George Kirby on the mound tonight, trying to put the last performance behind him. You got Logan Gilbert tomorrow. Win those two games, win the series, come home, feel a whole lot better about yourself and where you're at. A couple of roster moves yesterday as well. Samad Taylor heads to Tacoma. Ty France returns from paternity leave. He had three hits last night. Newcomers Colin Snyder and Cody Bolton both going to be on the IL, replaced by Brett DeGuss and Tyson Miller.
Kidney stones.
Yeah, kidney stones for Cody Bolton. That's a no thank you. Yeah, you know what they do?
Do they?
They hurt a lot.
Nice.
They're not fun. They're not fun at all. So feeling for you today, Cody. Good luck with that, man. It is a miserable experience.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
You know the number by now, Brock. 18.7 million. That was the average rating for Iowa and South Carolina on Sunday. It beat every basketball game, every other non-football or Olympic sporting event for the last 5 years. Just incredible. At its peak, 24 million people were watching.
Unbelievable. How many times, Mike, over 15 years? I don't know why I called you Mike and not Salk right there. But how many times? Yeah, how many times over all these years together have we talked about the importance of star power? Right, this football team needs more stars. This baseball team needs stars. You know, when we get the Sonics back, you're going to have two to three stars. I mean, Caitlin's star power, holy smokes. And I know Dawn Staley got some juice. She got a whole lot of star power. She's been a national champion. She's the highest compensated coach in basketball. There was some, you know, just the storylines galore. But over 24 million people at one point watched that game, 17 million. You know, the average for that was usually 2, 3, 4 million.
18.7 million was the average. Excuse me.
18.7.
Yeah. Jeez. It's a phenomenal number. It really is an incredible thing. And Good for her. I was saying earlier I'm already out there looking for tickets to go see the Storm take on the Fever when she's going to be here in a couple of months.
I wonder at some point. I wonder at some point if we'll look back at this like the golfers looked at Tiger.
Yeah.
Like, look at the way that Tiger elevated the tide for all of us, right? Just raised the levels for all of us of exposure and awareness and everything else.
Sure
and
feels that way.
I sure hope does. It is.
So that was a women's game. Men's game ended last night.
It is a UConn coronation. The Huskies make history. Back-to-back national champions.
Back-to-back for the Huskies, although I don't know that you heard before we were on this morning. It was an interesting take from my guy Evan Cohen on Unsportsmanlike, saying, well, he views it as more two in a row than back-to-back. And yeah, it's a little wordplay in there. He's not trying to take anything away from UConn, but saying, look, it wasn't the same group of players.
Right.
The other group is gone. They were one and dones and everything else, which is one of the reasons everyone's been talking so much more about the women's game. Mm-hmm. Credit to Hurley and to everybody else who did it. It's not taking away for anything from UConn or their fans, but maybe two in a row is different from back to back.
Maybe. I give a lot of credit to the buy-in, right? Just the buy-in of all of those guys. And they actually played tremendous defense. Had some people tweet me last night and say, tell Salk to watch because this is actually good basketball and guys that buy in and are selfless and do it for the guy next to him. And I'll give a little credit too to Ian Eagle. It's the first year without Jim Nance in a long time. And he slid into that seat next to two guys. And it was awesome.
He's
comfortable,
good.
Fun. The bird knows how to fly.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Back to work. Speaking of birds, Brock, back to work this week for the birds of the Seahawks, at least in a voluntary sense. Workouts at the facility. First opportunity for the players to spend some time around this new coaching staff, which is an important opportunity. Said it many times. Voluntary workouts, go. I know they're voluntary, but if you want your team to be great, you want your players to be there at the voluntary workouts. And even more so this year with a new coaching staff and a new opportunity for these guys to get to know each other.
So I can say 100% definitively, totally in a declarative way that this would not have happened if the regime was here. This would not have happened. You would not have seen DK and Tyler and Gino and all of those guys that you saw there yesterday. You would not. And I can say that because, well, it wouldn't have been open to them 2 weeks earlier with a new staff and new coaches. Right? This is the opportunity you get with a new regime to come in, to start this process that much earlier, to start getting those hours and time on task together that much more. And, to see just all your biggest money dudes, man, those are usually the guys, right? Those are usually the guys that have the means and the assets to say, I'll train elsewhere. I don't really need to be here.
Mm-hmm.
It's all the young and poor and hungry guys that are trying to make their mark. That was not the case, man. It was refreshing to see everybody there in class.
All right, good stuff. By the way, just a little note. Sounds like T'Vondre Sweat, who we mentioned yesterday, Seahawks are going to be meeting with him soon as well. So big, big, big boy in the middle of that defensive line. Kind of an interesting meeting. All right. Scott Service is going to join us from Toronto. He's got a big event coming up on Thursday, which we're certainly going to be talking about. And then also what's going on with his team. It has certainly not been the start that they were hoping for. What can they do to get their way out of it? We got a lot of questions for Scott. Coming up next, Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710.
This hour of the Brock and Salk Show is powered by Star Rentals, preferred supplier to the West's best contractors.
You're listening to Brock and Salk,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio
on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
All right, we roll along. Brock and Salk here, Seattle Sports on 710, SeattleSports.com. Scott Service, Mariners manager, joining us from Toronto. Good morning, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. How about yourself?
Well, we're doing pretty well. We obviously got some baseball questions for you, but we also know that you're here for a great purpose, and we want to start with that. Tell me a little bit about All Paws on Deck. I can tell the people that this is a big event. Thursday, 6 o'clock in Kirkland at Moss Bay Hall. I know you're going to be there. I know Cal's going to be there. I know JP's going to be there. Mm. What's going on? What is this?
Yeah, this is it's an awesome fundraiser. Some people know, but my wife Jill has been involved with animal welfare for about over 30 years, and you know, wanted to get involved in some things here in the state of Washington. There's huge need for it throughout the state, but especially over in Okanagan County on the eastern side. So they set up a nonprofit organization called Team Okanagan Animal Rescue, and they need to raise some funds. They have a big event coming up, a big spay and neuter event over there. So. The event is called The Big Fix. I thought Brock would appreciate that. So it's a fundraiser to help out. They've got some great auction items. It should be a good time. over at Moss Bay Hall. So, JP and Cal, Rick Riz will be there along with myself, and looking forward to it. It'll be on Thursday night, and hopefully have a good turnout over there, and still a few tickets left for that, some great auction items. The Julio signed jersey, some Ichiro signed jersey. We have a fishing trip with Luis Castillo. Mm-hmm. Crew set up on Lake Washington with a couple of our pitchers, George Kirby and Bryce Miller, and I will play a round of golf at Chambers Bay.
Wow.
So whoa, anybody whoa, can whoa. Ask me anything they want to ask me.
Whoa.
That was 4.5 hours of golf at Chambers Bay.
So the fishing trip with Luis, that's not in the Dominican, is it? Is it local?
No. That'll be salmon fishing.
Okay.
In the Pacific Northwest. So okay. We'll keep it there. So it's something that I did with Luis last year in September. We had a great time, and he really enjoys that. So great opportunity to go out on a boat with some guys and have a good day.
Cool.
Well, if you need a good captain now, Captain Tom Nelson, you just let me know. You know, I got a good little fishing captain there for 30-plus years in the Puget Sound. So, yeah, you just we'll chat off the air about that, Scott. Let's chat about the first 11 games here, you know, so early okay. in this season. How would you just, from your lenses, how would you kind of characterize the start?
I guess I'm a little surprised that we did not come out of the gates a little hotter. It's probably the most excited I've been about getting the season going, leaving spring training. Oftentimes when you leave spring training, you have a lot of question marks. You know, how's the bullpen going to play out or certain spots in your lineup? And I really felt leaving spring training, we would come out of the gates, you know, better than we have. But it is what it is. You know, we have been hard to get much rhythm going. You know, talk about offensively, and then there's certain nights where our starting pitching, which is really the backbone of our team, has struggled a little bit, and combination of the hitting, you know, inconsistent nights, starts on the mound, really hasn't allowed us to get any rhythm going yet. But I say all that, and keep in mind I said yet, because I really do like our team, and, you know, I like the makeup of the club. It just hasn't, you know, clicked yet, and you know, we needed to get it going. I think one of the things that we talked about this offseason with our players, too, you know, the games in April and May count just as much as they do in September. So I say all that, and we got to get better. You know, that includes, you know, myself, coaching staff, and everybody involved around our team, because I do not think we're playing up to capabilities yet. I say all that, and we're a few games under 500. We have a lot of baseball to go, but I do think we're playing, or capable of playing much better for sure.
Can you expand on one of those points a little bit? It's something that we've talked about a lot is the idea of it being early and trying to understand the difference between the games mattering early, but not necessarily viewing 11 games as a predictor of how the next 151 are going to go.
Yeah, if anybody's seen our seasons the last few years, they understand that we have turned it on. You know, once you get to the mid to the end part of the season for whatever reason. And we were hoping that was not going to be what we need to do this year, but it is a long journey. And I think, you know, we talk about things that happen. You're still trying to find out about players. And sometimes there's certain games where you give players longer rope. There's sometimes early in the season, you give them a shorter rope because you're playing the long game, wanting guys to have plenty of things left in the tank. So as we get deep in this season, so there's a lot that goes into it, but I say all that, our guys understand that. They know we need to get better. You know, you talk about the effort level. Are we doing the right things in our preparation? I think we are, but when the game starts, we got to execute. And that's one thing we're not doing at the highest level yet, which we're certainly, like I say, we're capable of doing it, but it's got to get better.
Scott, you said a word there as well that I utilize a bunch in my commentary with a different sport, and that is rhythm. And I haven't often thought mm-hmm. of baseball in a rhythm. I probably should, because there's 162 games and it's every night and there is a beat to it. But you say rhythm, I think of offensive coordinator and how hard sometimes it is with a new offensive coordinator to watch, you know, an offense get into rhythm in the sport that I call. Could that be some of the play here 11 games in, just some of the new thoughts, some of the new process, some of the new things that Brandt's trying to do from an offensive coordinating situation?
It could. I think we are, you know, how we go about our approach each night, I actually think it's in a better spot now than it's ever been. But again, you can have all the meetings and talk about all the things you want at 5 o'clock. When the lights come on at 7, you've got to go out and execute that, you know. And the last night's game, for example, you know, we didn't get the leadoff hitter on in any of the 9 innings. You know, you get the leadoff hitter on in an inning, you have like a 54% chance of scoring a run that inning. So if you don't, it gets much more challenging. Now you're relying on an extra base hit, a home run, something like that. So, you know, doing those little things, talking about, you know, in rhythm, you know, so you get some flow. And I talk about, you know, just last night's game, it's fresh in my mind, but we actually hit a lot of balls hard last night. You know, the 10 hardest balls hit in the game last night, 8 of them were by our guys. Julio hit 3 balls over 105 last night and didn't get a hit. You know, there is some of the luck factor involved in baseball. It usually does balance itself out over the course of a long season. But, you know, we're seeing some guys make some adjustments. I think Dom Canzone's a prime example. I think the last couple of games, he looked great. He has made an adjustment, and it's paying off for him. Thought last night Julio made a big-time adjustment, smoked 3 balls. Hopefully, you know, Cal and JP hitting home runs late in the game last night kind of helped them get them going here for the rest of the series. But, yeah, there is that rhythm that we're searching for right now. We just haven't gotten. And we do have a lot of new players on this team as well. So that takes a little while for that you know, vibe to kind of come together in the clubhouse. But I say all that, and I'm looking forward to getting George Kirby out there tonight.
Yeah, as you should be. Talking to Scott Servais, and you know, you mentioned Julio and some of his adjustments. Of course, we've talked quite a bit about Julio here over the course of the first 11 games. He's the guy, right? He's the superstar here. Is there any common thread between his last 3 starts to seasons as you try to figure out how to get him going? Is there any similarity between these 3 kind of slow starts that he's had?
I think they've all been a little different, quite frankly, Mike. You know, the first year, if you remember back to his rookie year, he wasn't – all of the close pitches were going against him. Remember right. That whole thing? He couldn't catch a break. And then, you know, but he was doing the right things. And then, you know, last year, I think there was some – maybe he put some pressure on himself with the All-Star game being in Seattle and really, you know, struggled to get going there. And then all of a sudden he got, you know, just smoking hot there in the second half and really carries our team. I think this year he has a you know, clear understanding of, you know, what it's like to get out of a little bit of a slump, if you want to call it that. Again, I'm looking at, you know, most recent stuff. I know he came in early yesterday. He made some adjustments just to trying to get the ball out front a little bit more. I talk about it, and I'm serious about it. When he hits the ball in the air, it is awesome. You know, he just hits it so hard. He just does things that other players don't do. And like the ball he flew out to at the wall last night, you know, for whatever reason, he just barely, you know, just clipped it, just didn't get quite enough of it. But that's a ball that's normally a home run for him, and it's caught right at the wall. So based on the, you know, the metrics that you have when the ball comes off the bat, but he did make some adjustments last night. Hopefully he builds on that. You know, he finds a couple holes tonight and really gets it going because, again, the top of our lineup, they've struggled. They struggled to get on base. They struggled to produce. Like I said, you know, Dom Canzone, like Ty France is off to a great start. We've actually gotten very good production out of third base so far this season. So we do have some positives. It just consistently up and down the lineup, it hasn't clicked yet.
I mean, is it just possible just go on paternity leave? I mean, come back and rank, get 3 hits. Is it just that simple?
I will say, and I've seen a lot of guys do that. You're gone for 3 days. You totally forget about baseball. You get so locked in on your wife, family, first child. He gets on a plane yesterday morning in Seattle, gets to the ballpark about 5:00. Of course, I got him in the lineup, walks out there and just rakes. Yep. I mean, why? He's not thinking about it. He's just happy. He's got his life, you know, in a really good spot. The wife and the baby are doing great. Now, oh, yeah, by the way, I'm going to play baseball tonight. Ty had a great game last night. Yeah.
How much would that occasionally help guys to just find ways out of their own head?
I think it helps them a lot, Mike. I really do. I think the distractions, you know, that you have, understanding that there is more to life than just that baseball game you're playing. Again, it's your job. You get paid very well to do it. But, you know, guys are grinding. You know, they're trying to figure out ways. They're looking at video. They're talking to coaches. They're in the cage early. Sometimes if you just get away from it for a little bit, the game looks a whole lot easier and it looks a whole lot simpler. And, you know, it's not uncommon. The guys that go have a you know, a child like that, they're gone for 3 days, they come back, and then they're on fire right away. It's just a different vibe about them.
Dad strength. Works every time.
I mean, I tell Maura and Justin, get married, have kids. Try to tell them that all the time. They get tired of me saying it. But yeah, it could be kind of fun. Hey, we played your comments of Luis last night and just kind of finding the middle of the plate. Is he kind of study those numbers, kind of next level stuff? Is there anything that stands out with some of his starts here early in April?
No, I think that, you know, the quality of the pitches, you know, whether it's fastball, velocity, or movement, the slider, the changeup, they're all about the same as what we've seen in the past. It really comes down to execution. And, you know, we saw it last night. You know, there's certain times he would get ahead in the count, and all of a sudden the ball leaks back over the plate, in the middle of the plate, and it's not a quality, you know, 0-2, 1-2, 2-2 pitch. Then there's some other ones he threw off the plate, and Schneider kind of reaches the bat out and pokes a single into right field. But I think the execution and kind of like, and we've seen this from Luis. That's why he's just been such a special pitcher for so long. When he gets somebody two strikes and he gets up on top of them, he buries them. He kills them. And we haven't seen his ability to do that. Just hasn't been as consistent, and it's hurt him. You know, he's given up more hits than we've ever seen him give up. He's never had a stretch like this with us. I would be more concerned if the pitch characteristics were backing up, the velocity, the movement, things like that. Those aren't. Those are as good as they've ever been. Now, he's not throwing 97, 98 like he was in that playoff game here a couple years ago, but in a normal major league start, the pitches are all about what they're used to be. He's just not executing them to the precise edges like he typically does, especially when he's ahead in the count. And major league players are going to put the bat on the ball and they're finding some hits.
Yeah, it is fun. So if I understand that, that's a command thing, not a stuff thing. Is that right?
That's the way I would look at it, yes.
Yeah.
And you often saw last night in the game, you know, Cal sitting just off the plate and all of a sudden the ball away or in, and the ball's sliding all the way across to the other side of the plate, which is absolutely where you don't want to go because that runs into that hitter's, you know, happy zone, so to speak. And then, you know, good things are not happening.
The other question I guess I would have here, and then I want to make sure we chat a little bit more and make sure we tell people where they can go to attend this this fundraiser on Thursday night. Fun event with Scott and JP and Cal's going to be there and some other folks as well. You know, three or four parts to the game with offense, defense, pitching, and base running. There's probably others, but let's kind of start with those four. Where are you feeling like this club has an opportunity to take a big step forward soonest?
Offense. I really do. I think you know, offense covers up a lot of things. If you're out there consistently scoring 5-6 runs a night, it takes care of a lot of things. I think our pitching has not been as elite as it has been in the past. Early in the season here, it hasn't been bad, but it hasn't been elite. I think from just playing the game defensively, we haven't made a lot of errors, but there's certain plays that, you know, the ball it's rattling around or kicking out of somebody's glove or it's a double play ball that we don't get the double play. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? There's things like that as far as playing clean, sharp baseball. I thought Rojas made some excellent plays at third base last night. Where, you know, you're in the major leagues, it should be that athletic play that, you know, it could be a hit, but we turn it into an out. We haven't done that as consistently as I expect that we can. I think on the base running part of it, you know, there's been some nights we've been better. I thought last night, you know, I got to give Kiermaier a ton of credit. You know, Ty tried to go first to third on a play that you normally always do, and Kiermaier is a gold glover with a great arm, made a great throw. We were lucky to get in there, but we haven't had a lot of guys on base, so kind of hard to get a great feel for where that's at right now. But offense is where I can see us picking it up the quickest and have the biggest impact, because I do think we have a good lineup, and it's a deeper lineup, just not clicking yet.
All right, well, speaking of impact, Scott, we appreciate you taking a few minutes this morning from Toronto. All paws on deck. So the website is givebutter.com/allpawsondeck, and the event is this Thursday, 6:00, Moss Bay Hall in Kirkland. Scott will be there. JP is going to be there. Cal is going to be there.
Jill's going to be there.
If
the
you
big,
would like.
The big fix is going to be there.
I'm kind of curious to see what golf with Scott service goes for. Like, what is, I wonder what that bid ends up looking like at a fundraiser.
$2 million, probably.
$2 million. Yeah.
Yeah. I will say I have done it a couple times. It is a good time. And the guys down at Chambers Bay take great care of us, get us a tee time. We'll have a good time. Do it on an off day. Here at some point in the season, and it is a lot of fun. You get to find out about people, and you get some people that the inside a little bit on what is actually going on. And again, there's always baseball. It's always funny. They start off on the first hole. Everybody's real quiet. They hit their first tee shot. And then we start walking down the first fairway. And I'm like, okay, guys, you got 4.5 hours. Let it rip.
Right.
And as soon as I say that, here come the questions. They just come. What about this guy? What about that guy?
Yeah.
Where's your favorite place to go? You know, things like that. And man, it is a lot of fun.
A man of your advanced age, you can still walk around Chambers. That's not a problem for you.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
I mean, it's 8.5 miles up and down those hills. I just want to make sure you can handle that at this point.
Oh, God. Wow.
Oh, wow.
If you would like to bid on it, Mike, I would love to play golf with you. And we could have a little side bet there as well.
I don't think anybody needs that. Yeah. No, that doesn't sound like something anybody needs at all. All right, Scott, we appreciate it. Yeah, you could have Maura come. She could kill some wildlife along the way. That seems to be her strength in the golf game. Scott, thank you.
Thank you, man.
Good luck. Would love to see a couple of wins here from the two young pitchers. And on we go. Appreciate it. And we'll talk soon.
Sounds good, guys. Thanks for having me on.
All right, take care. There you go. There's Scott Servais. And, yeah, if you'd like to go to the event, you know, Brock, I think I'm going to be there on Thursday as well.
I think so.
Yeah, I didn't want to, like, tease that as part of, like, I kind of want to surprise Scott. But, yeah, givebutter.com/allpawsondeck. Tickets look like they're $125. So givebutter.com/allpawsondeck. Pretty cool event with Scott and JP and Cal, raising money for a really good cause for animals. And
well, I mean, if you're going to be there, why don't you do an auction item, come in the studio with us?
Well, I mean, I'm happy. Nobody asked me.
Start at 100.
I don't like intruding, but I've, okay. Of course, if anybody ever wants to come in studio, we give those things away to charity auctions all the time. Scott didn't ask.
Okay.
He's got better things.
Well, I'm putting it out
there. What would you rather do? Come hang out with Jamokes like us or go fishing with Luis Castillo? That seems like, or 3-hour yacht cruise with George and Bryce.
Yes.
That sounds like much better than hanging out with us. So, yeah, some pretty cool stuff at the event on Thursday, All Paws on Deck. Right now, Blue 88.
This is Brock and Salk's Blue 88.
Blue 88! Blue 88!
We take you to the field as Brock Huard breaks down 3 football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
All right, Brock. Well, there were some folks at the VMAC yesterday. What's going on? Are we encouraged? Are we happy? What are we seeing?
I am. I am very encouraged. And yes, Monday was the first day that they could all get back there and get to work. And this is the strength and conditioning element of it, right? They have different phases, and we've heard this over the years. And here's phase one, and here's phase two. Phase one is like Gene Hackman and Hoosiers. There's no ball. We are just going to do the fundamentals. We're going to do, you know, some of the time getting together. I don't even know if the coaches, Salk, at this point can be out on the field with the guys. I believe this is all really in the hands of the strength and the conditioning guys to start getting them in shape, start running them. And super, super encouraged to see all the stars there, all their biggest, most talented, most veteran players. And the Seahawks are going to make some players available to the media tomorrow as well, which I can't remember doing the first week of any OTA over the last few years. So, yeah, all of that to me, very, very encouraging. And there was a word that you heard from a few of the guys yesterday, a 5-letter word that I heard from Tyler, a 5-letter word that I heard from Julian. Mm. And that word was smart. SMART. Man, this new staff is smart. And they are going to challenge us. We're not just going to be lining up and showing our cards. We are going to be playing these hands a whole lot differently than we have in the past. And I like it.
All right, question number 2. Seahawks don't have a second round pick. Tavondre Sweat would be a very interesting fit here. Huge defensive lineman, mammoth presence right in the middle to help stop the run. He was also arrested for DWI in Texas just this week. Seahawks are bringing him in for a visit.
Mm-hmm.
Could this be an option if he drops because of that?
Yeah, I think absolutely.
Could those things be connected?
I think it was an option before any of this came out. I'm going to guess this trip was booked in some advance, which you have to do with these agents and with these players. And, you know, as they've got visits all over the country lined up over this week and into next before that shuts down and the draft comes in 2 weeks from Thursday. So he was already on their list. You know, we had Matt Miller on last week. And he kept talking about Byron Murphy. And early on in a lot of these mocks, we saw Byron Murphy. Mm-hmm. And I think it's smart, and I totally understand it, because Byron Murphy is built a lot like Madsubike or whatever his name is from Baltimore that had a breakout year, signed his extension, and, you know, he's twitchy, he can really run, he's super, super explosive. But Baltimore also had some meat eaters, man, some space eaters, some enormous human beings. So did Michigan in that year. So you need a little bit of both. I think when you've got a Jaren Reed, when you've got a Leonard Williams, you do already have a little bit of both. But for the future and for building the wall at the line of scrimmage to set those edges, having a big boy like Devondre would be a nice little asset in the middle of it all.
All right, question number three. Rome Odunze, is he going to be the second highest drafted Husky in the history of the program?
I went back and looked to 1960, kind of the modern era of all the NFL drafts. And gosh, there were some years there, Salk. I know that you may not be familiar with names, and many of our listeners wouldn't be familiar with some of those names of some of the defensive linemen. But man, you had seventh pick, eighth pick, Reggie Rogers, big old defense. Like, you had some top-notch big people drafted as Don James built a national title team and Rose Bowl winners consistently in his quarter century at the helm there as the Dog Father. So he'd have to be picked somewhere between 2 and 6.
Okay.
Steve Entman was the number one pick. And I think I shared with you the story when I saw Steve Entman. Dang, we're running up against it. When I saw Steve Entman down at the national title game, and he says, dumbest thing I ever did. I should not have agreed to be the number one pick. Quentin Coriot is the number two pick of the Colts, got more money than I did. But I wanted to be able to say I was the number one pick. They negotiated that money before they could do that back in the day before it was all slotted.
Crazy.
So I went one. Coriot made more money at two. And I really wish I had some of that coin now. I don't know with all these quarterbacks and other receivers. I bet he ends up right in the same realm as a bunch of them, 7, 8, or 9, which would put him in some pretty high regard. But not the second highest ever, because that was the number 7 overall pick.
All right, there you go. That is today's Blue 88. And thank you to Scott Service for popping on this morning. Brock, coming up next, we can shift gears, kind of stick with the Seahawks and get away from the Mariners for a little bit before Jeff Passan joins us at 8:30. Morris shot over something here that I want to ask you about. The Seahawks, it's a familiar plot.
Mm-hmm.
In an unfamiliar way. It's next on Brock and Salk.